Before we begin, we want to issue a trigger warning. This episode discusses topics that some listeners may find distressing, including gun violence, suicide, and mental health struggles. We approach these subjects with sensitivity and respect, but please be advised that this content might be difficult to hear. Listener discretion is advised. And if you or someone you know is struggling, we encourage seeking support from a mental health professional or even speak with someone today. Help is available. Just dial 988 within the United States.
Well, all new tonight at 6, the IRS says it won't make any more surprise visits at your home or office. No more door knocks. The agency says it's taking new steps to protect taxpayers from scams. So this is a decades-old policy that's now coming to an end. Agencies used to show up to people's homes to collect unpaid taxes or unfiled returns. But the IRS says these new steps will not only protect people from scam artists posing as an agent, it'll also protect their employees from threats. So instead of making unannounced visits, the IRS will just send out an email or set up a meeting.
Welcome to Tax Crime Junkies, where we dive deep into stories that shape our world. In today's episode, we're unraveling a tale that takes us into the heart of government bureaucracy, personal tragedy, and the complex world of taxation. Our guest is the author of Tax Me If You Can, Tax Cheats, Government Waste, and The Shooter. It's a gripping book that exposes the underbelly of the IRS and the American tax system. This isn't just a story about numbers and laws. It's about human lives, ethical dilemmas, and the high costs of enforcing and evading taxes. From witnessing a taxpayer's tragic suicide to navigating the murky waters of government policy and taxpayer rights, our guest provides an insider's account that's as enlightening as it is haunting. So tune in as we explore the fine line between duty and compassion in the world of tax collection. Welcome back, everyone, to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crime. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzynski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzynski. I'm an enrolled agent. I'm admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor. And like you, I have a real interest in true crime. We decided to create a true crime podcast to combine the love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies.
Okay, Tom, I'm so excited today because we have a famous author with us today.
It's so great to actually talk to somebody who's dealing or has dealt with tax crimes, tax controversy.
Yes. And she has recently put out a new book, and I have to say I was mesmerized. So with us today is author and enrolled agent Anna Mace. Anna, thank you so much for giving some of your time to spend with us here at Tax Crime Junkies.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you.
So, Anna, your book is called Tax Me If You Can, Tax Cheats, Governmental Waste, and The Shooter, which, of course, got my intrigue going. And I knew I had to purchase this book and read it. And I am, maybe I shouldn't be embarrassed, but I read it in one day.
Hey, if you find a book you love, you consume it.
Yes.
That's just the way it works.
And I do have a book light, which allows me to read
exactly
even in the dark.
Oh, so well, thank you.
So you write this book, and you spent how many years with the IRS did you actually work?
I worked for 15 years prior to retiring.
Wow.
And what types of roles did you have at the IRS?
I only had one role, and that was the revenue officer, collector. I was collecting for the IRS.
And when you first applied, talk about that a little bit, because I don't think they exactly described the job that you were going to be doing. You sort of just applied.
I did apply for this position. The position description was, given to us. Now, not without, any warnings as to any possible danger or any special training, physical training that might be required. There was none. So we entered the job thinking, we're just going to go knock on doors and, show our credentials and collect.
So jiu-jitsu was not on that list of initial training for this job.
No.
And I know you really had some harrowing experiences.
Right.
And so I imagine that was quite a shock to you, because nothing had prepared you for seeing some of these incidents.
Yeah, the jiu-jitsu would not have helped me, in my particular, case.
But may have tipped you off that there might be some danger lurking out there.
That's correct. And it would have been good to know at least what could be happening there. Mm-hmm. At least to have that knowledge and either accept it or not accept the job.
It's funny you mentioned that, because about 12 years ago, I actually applied to be a revenue officer. Before I started my career as it is now. And when you read the job description, it doesn't give you a sense, and I agree with you, in any way that you would be in danger. It makes it sound like it is a routine job at the IRS and nothing more. And it doesn't really disclose, at least at the time it didn't, that there could be these potential risks. So I think it's really interesting. I totally agree with your perspective on that.
Now, in your book, you describe one harrowing incident where you witnessed a taxpayer commit suicide. And it was just a really profound story for me because of two reasons. One, I think it really reveals the true danger that you were facing down and that other IRS employees Right. face every single day in your work on behalf of the taxpayers. But it also was profound just seeing such an extreme example of desperation Right. that taxpayers are facing. Could you share how this experience impacted you personally and professionally, and in whatever detail you feel comfortable sharing?
Sure. Well, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, right?
Yeah.
True.
So once you've seen, the details of suicide by gun, with the brains, flowing out and landing on the sand, on the driveway.
Oh, no.
A convulsing body, the arms that's, flapping down in the last, moments of this person's life.
Right.
You can't forget that. You don't. It stays right. in your brain.
Right. I imagine just the fear for your own life as well.
Well, at first, as I described in the book, I thought I was a target. I was the target.
Right.
Him. That's, just naturally came because we were after this male for months and months, sending him letters, and so forth, and naturally, I expected him to kill me. So right. I'm actually very lucky to be alive here today.
Right. That was my expectation as well, as you went into describing in your book, was, the fact that, and it's all happening so fast. So you recognize a weapon. And of course, the first thought you have is, where do I run? Run and get away from this person.
Right. And then you can't. You're frozen. You freeze. And you say goodbye in your mind. You say goodbye to everyone.
Right.
Did you have any idea or inkling, or in retrospect, any warning signs that this individual potentially could go to violence in this situation?
Well, interestingly enough, normally you know, you go by yourself to these field calls. So they're unannounced and you go solo. In this particular case, I don't know what gave me the clue, but something told me, and you know, this man didn't even owe any money. He just had unfiled tax returns. So it wasn't even a big deal, you know, as far as I was concerned. But there were signs like his house. It was so dark. There were blinds. They were always closed. The grass, you know, was uncut. It was just, it had that feeling of something terrible, you know, transpiring there. And so I asked my ex, you know, on the job instructor to come with me just because I didn't feel good about it. You have that intuition, and it happened that in that particular case.
Wow, that's really terrifying. I think it's also an example that it really didn't have anything to do with you or the tax situation. To your point, he didn't owe anything. And the way you describe his house, it's clear that there was a mental illness occurring. But what a difficult impact that must have been to your own mental health. As you said, you can't unsee that.
Right.
I'm wondering, how did you cope with the trauma of experiencing that incident, and what support did you find helpful during that time?
So the IRS gave me 3 days off.
That's it?
Wow. Yeah,
that's it. 3 days off. I'm not kidding. So it happened on a Tuesday. They gave me till next Monday. On Monday, I had to be back at work.
Wow.
So it didn't quite sink in, you know, at first. So I was shaken up, you know, cried, you know, went through, you know, the process. But I thought I was going to be okay. You know, it just didn't sink in.
Right.
And then what happened is they sent me back to the field. They sent me back to the field within like 2 weeks. I was back out to the field, and it was the area was very similar to the area where, you know, the suicide happened. So orange groves, you know, very farm, you know, farming, lots of farms, large lots, you know, no neighbors, stuff like that. So when we arrived and my friend came with me, another revenue officer from the office, she came with me just to, you know, just to accompany me, just to, you know, see if I'm going to be okay. And I told her that, you know, my legs and my feet started to shake. You know, I said, I can't move. I can't go there. I can't get out of the car. But, you know, she gently pushed me and said it's going to be okay, and she would do the talk, and I just had to stand there and do nothing, and I almost collapsed.
Oh,
and
this,
wow.
This is my first panic attack. The typical symptoms of choking, being unable to breathe, you know, unable to move, and my friend, you know, instead of taking me to the hospital, she called our manager, and the manager told her to bring me to the office.
Oh my gosh. So here you are having a medical emergency, and they want to get clearance from the office before they assist you medically.
That's correct. So they take me, she takes me back to the office, which was a long drive. You know, but the panic attack wouldn't stop. It just couldn't stop by itself.
Of course.
You know, she parks outside of the office. All the managers came out, you know, ran downstairs, you know, came to the parking lot. Everybody is staring at me through the window of the car as I'm suffocating.
Oh.
I mean, you know, and after that, they gave her the clearance to call 911.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. That should have been the first call when it happened, of course.
You would expect, right?
Right. And I know from your book that even after that happened, you were requesting, almost begging, to have more time in the office or to change job descriptions or roles so that you wouldn't have to go out, and at least at that time, till you felt ready. And how did they respond to that?
Within the IRS, and I can't speak for any other agency because I've never worked for another agency, but as far as the IRS is concerned, as long as you're being a good soldier, you're doing the work, you're keeping your mouth shut, you don't complain too much, you're good to go, you're fine. But God forbid something happen, you're no longer on good terms with them. So for 15 years, and I didn't continuously to, continue to apply for all these other positions because I came to accept that this is it for me. That's my job. Right. And I'm just going to have to deal with it. And I'm going to have to suffer from extreme anxiety. I'm going to have to suffer from depression, but I'm going to have to go out there and I'm going to have to do the job because that's just the way it is. And so I did that for 15 years.
Wow. Well, I also know they probably didn't want to let you go because in the book, you really describe excelling at work and at least prior to this incident, taking your job seriously and wanting to do very well at whatever goals you were setting or what they were helping you set and achieving and surpassing those goals.
Well, once I've come to accept that this is my fate and that's what I have to do for the next 30 years till I retire, I might as well just excel and be the best and do what I can do to be an example to others. And so I became a technical expert on things like nominees, transferees, or alter egos, all these concepts that are normally done by a specialized group called the ATAT. But I never joined the ATAT, although they asked me to do that. But the ATAT guys trained me, and I just came to like it. I came to like that. Until the next accident happened here in Miami to a colleague of mine. So
That's right. You worked with Christine Brandt, right?
Christine Brandt worked in Maitland. She was from Lakeland, but belonged to the Maitland post of duty. So that's where we met, and we were actually group mates.
So is this who you were going to talk about? Because we just covered the Randy Novak case, and that's where the taxpayer agreed to pay an undercover FBI agent to kill Christine, who was auditing him.
Right. So Christine was not actually auditing him. She was a collector. She was a revenue officer, just like me. So She was trying to collect from him. And I guess he had some bank accounts hidden offshore.
Yes.
But I guess Christine Brandt was a very nice, calm, a very laid back, non-aggressive type of person. So it wasn't about Christine at all. It's the hatred, the hatred of the government. And I've seen that in other cases where people just, some individuals just can't, they don't know how to deal with it.
Right. I know she came across in court in her testimony as just being a very kind person and patient, and even the suspect in the case,
Randy himself,
who was convicted and went on to prison, he described her as a nice lady and who he gave all the paperwork requested to. And so it's mind-boggling that he had this much hatred bottled up inside of him.
Right. It seemed like a contradiction, right? Oh, the person I'm working with is great, but I'm going to kill her anyway. And it's just unbelievable how hatred towards the IRS could drive somebody to do that.
And this is quite profound. It's becoming, and I see this now more and more often, that people become so frustrated with the government and their distrust and hatred of the government that the whoever shows up at their door, whether it's me or Christine or John or anybody else, you know, you as a representative, that face, that's all they can, that's who they have in front of them. So they're going to direct their anger towards you.
You use the word government to describe this. Do you think that the hatred extends beyond the tax system? And at that moment, you're just the representative of the United States?
Absolutely. I mean, just recently, in my current position, representing taxpayers and being an enrolled agent, I have a client, an elderly man, who basically said that he would rather hang himself than have his money taken to be sent to Ukraine, he said specifically.
Right.
I hear this sentiment all across the board. So I see this is getting worse.
Right. Wow. And that's with you working on behalf of the taxpayer. So now you no longer represent the IRS. After you retired from the IRS, you went on to become an enrolled agent, and now you're sort of working on the other side of the table, and he still felt that hopelessness, I guess, in hatred for where the money's going.
That's correct.
You know, Dominique, I, as an enrolled agent, I also do a lot of representation work. I've sadly had a few clients who, even though we were working to solve their case, at some point mentioned indirectly that they would be better off dead than because they couldn't afford to pay the IRS what they owed, or they couldn't comply with the law. And unfortunately, I think, and I would love to hear Anna's perspective, I think the stress of having a tax problem ultimately exacerbates some other mental health issues with a lot of folks. And it kind of leads down to this spiral. Right. So maybe sometimes it's not even just the government. It's just that they already have a lot of stressors in life.
Right.
And this is the thing that just cracked in their mind, and it pushes them to the edge.
Right.
Well, and you're absolutely right. Just like my taxpayer who committed the suicide didn't owe a dime at that time, you know, but all the other issues, and he was seriously depressed, depressed, writing suicide letters for a year. And so the combination of all the stressors, and let's face it, life is stressful out there. And you see that person knocking on your door and telling you that he's going to take your car or your livelihood or your paycheck. Who are you going to direct your anger at? You're going to direct it at them.
Absolutely. What's that like for you now? You've sort of been able to see both sides of the story. In one role, you're representing the United States, even far beyond the taxes, as you mentioned. You know, that you could be any part of the government, but they see you in that role as representing the government. What is it like for you now being a representative and an advocate for the taxpayers who are your clients?
Well, back in the day, during my IRS, you know, career, I faced and talked to so many different CPAs, enrolled agents, and so forth, and many were very frustrated, and they used to tell me, thank you for being nice, and I was being nice because I knew how bad it could be for people, so that's why I was being nice. Prior to that, I don't recall myself being too nice. But once you see that and realize this is how people feel, and this is what can happen, and I am not going to cause that. I'm going to do everything in my power to make them feel better, to make them feel okay, even though I have a job to do, and even though I might file that nominee lien, but I'm going to try to at least be nice. You don't have to be nasty. You can be just nice. And so when these people used to tell me these things, I was like, why are you telling me this? Like, what about others? I mean, I had no idea. Now that I am on the other side and I am the one who is making those calls, and I get in many times get like really bad service, as you can imagine, because that's what you guys do as well. Get somebody nasty on the phone. You understand. You start to understand that, hey, people just need to be nicer on all sides.
And you know, and I agree with you, ultimately the goal of the representative, like you or I or the IRS agent, should be the same. It's a resolution of the case, right? And in order to get the situation resolved in the most direct and peaceful way is by working collaboratively, collegially, and nicely with the other person on the other side of the table. And if we had that from both sides more, we would have less stress, less angst, less anger about our tax system and about working with IRS agents overall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think now that I've seen what I've seen now over the past couple of years working, representing taxpayers and talking to the IRS personnel, I'm just shocked at the level of, and I always knew there were no consequences most of the time for a rudeness and, you know, bad customer service and so forth. So you basically had to kill someone to lose your job. The job is guaranteed and the managers won't do anything to you, irregardless how bad the customer service is or the job is.
Right.
But now I see there is no accountability at all. No accountability. So as long as that continues, there is no way to improve the service.
Right. You spoke quite a bit about that in your book, which I just found fascinating, speaking about the inefficiencies that you witnessed during your time there. And you just sound like such an achiever and a superstar and really good at what you do, but not everybody that you work with feels similarly. And so I got the impression from reading your book, and this is how I would imagine myself in your place, just being so aggravated and frustrated at how little is being done.
Same.
And without concern or worry that there would be retribution or losing your job, those types of consequences.
Yes, yes. It was very, very hard. It was almost unbearable. And I come from, my background is internal audit, risk consultant, efficiency. And you end up in a place like that, which is completely the opposite, and where nothing makes sense. None of their processes make sense. And you just want to scream on the top of your lungs. You just want to scream and say, hey, this is not how you should be doing this. But it's such a huge bureaucracy that you realize you try once and you try twice, and then you see that nothing, it's just the way it is.
Now, we know that the IRS is looking to change how it operates. And I think we got some good news recently that the IRS did change their policy, that there'll be no more unannounced house calls or visits by revenue officers. I think you and I both agree that's a really welcome change based on your story. What other changes do you think, like if you had to pick a couple big ones that the service needs to make in order to solve some of the problems you've identified in your book?
Okay, that's a good question. The quality of service comes to mind immediately. Let's face it, you know, you are there on the phone, you call ACS, you call the customer service, and you want a transcript. This one call can take an hour. Yesterday took 1 hour.
Yes.
1 hour for one transcript and a compliance call where there was nothing really. You know, why on earth would it take an hour? Because I know the screens that she was looking at. I know the screens and I know how long it takes to pull them up. You can do this call in 5 minutes, 10 max, 10 tops, 10 minutes. She takes an hour.
Anna, does that mean you do not have cell phone numbers of employees that you can call? You still have to wait online just like all the rest of us?
Well, of course, that would be a Unix violation. Who would want to lose their job because of, you know, me calling them for an account that's not assigned to them? Yeah, of course I call the 800 number, just like you.
So aggravating. But I have to say, because I don't have the background of working for the service, and so I actually felt very vindicated reading your book, because some of the processes you describe as being so inefficient, I was yelling out loud while I'm reading, I knew it! I know that time it happens!
It's very frustrating. It really is. You know that.
Right. Well, talk a little bit about the process of writing this book, because I know you had to get some permissions in terms of disclosures. You know, you are talking about some sensitive topics there. What was that process like for you? Because I think you were trying to work with the IRS as you prepared to release this book.
Well, that's a whole different new book to write about, this process. So once you retire, this is as of 2016. Prior to that, there were no requirements. So once you retire nowadays, they give you a pub. And I don't recall the number of the pub. It's a publication, you know, that tells you what you are allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And so I went by this pub and I had to contact the number on the pub. They give you a telephone number before you speak, before you discuss any topic, before you publish anything, you have to get their permission. So I was finishing my book and I decided to give them a call. And this was during COVID in 2021, I believe. So I tried to call the 800 number, and that's a communication and liaison department in Washington, D.C. So each manuscript has to go through them. The number was unmanned. There was no answer. There was nobody answering the phone. And I kept leaving message after message after message, trying to comply with their own requirement. So I kept calling for a year.
Wow.
A year?
A year. I kept calling for a year. And then I thought maybe because of COVID, they were shut down temporarily. I didn't know what was happening. But after a year, I realized I have to do something else. I have to get creative if I want to get my book published and not have any consequences with them. So I decided to go on LinkedIn. I went on LinkedIn and I started looking up the IRS personnel from that department. And I found one lady. So I friended her, or I contacted her on LinkedIn. And I said, look, I'm such and such, and this is what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to comply with you guys. But she said, what are you talking about? They didn't even know what I was talking about. I had to send her a copy of their own publication.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sort of not surprised by this.
Well, you're right. Why should you be surprised? Exactly. So I sent the copy of the pub, and so the lady went and she found somebody who would, she told me there was no, the job was unfilled. So they make a requirement, they create the 800 number, but there is, it's unmanned. There is nobody there.
Oh my gosh.
So she had to go and give this task to one of her colleagues to review my manuscript. So this colleague of hers reviews my manuscript, and he took his time. And then he gets back to me after a couple of months. So he said, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to refer you to a retired lawyer from our department. She might give you the guidance. And he did. She said, the taxpayer advocate, when they go to testify in Congress, they have to blend at least three cases into one case. So to make the taxpayers unrecognizable.
Oh.
Correct. So I said, okay, wow. So I have to actually like rewrite my whole manuscript. And he says, yes.
Oh.
So I rewrote the manuscript and I blended three cases into one. And he says, mind you that each of these processes, they take months and months at a time. It's not an easy task. And so I resubmit my manuscript, and the guy gets back to me after, you know, a couple of weeks, and he says, Anna, I am recognizing stories. Now you just blended them into three into one. I said, wow. What do you want me to do? I don't want to see these stories. Yeah, now I already know, and they can recognize themselves. Now you have to come up with brand new stories.
Oh, wow.
Well, I don't know how long it took, maybe 6 months more to have up with more stories and go digging back in my mind and, you know, recollect and remember the details and so forth. But I did that. But my first manuscript had much better stories, much more exciting stories, because I took the best. Right. I couldn't present them anymore. Now you have not as exciting stuff, but there was more excitement there in the first manuscript.
You know, the irony about that is that I thought they would be more particular about disclosure of IRS procedures,
right,
and sort of the work process and what things are like in the office. And to hear they're just more concerned about the identities, which, of course, to your point, no one else is going to know who the stories are about.
Now, Anna, do you think they told you it was to protect the identities, but do you think there was an ulterior motive that they didn't want some of this information to actually come out?
Perhaps both. Because in the end, after all of these processes and everything that they've put me through, when I redid everything and resubmitted with the new stories, they didn't give me the clearance. I never got the permission, the authorization to publish the book.
But you never got it at all. You just published without it.
I never got it at all.
Wow.
But let me give you a clarification here of the answer, the response that I got from the CNL, from the department. So they said they cannot disallow me, but they will not allow me. So interpret this how you will. But I think what they were talking about is the possibility of a lawsuit by any of the taxpayers that were described in this book, because they had no knowledge of my cases, of my casework. Mm-hmm. This is years and years of casework. So there was no way for them to verify. So if anyone came and tried to sue them, basically claiming that they recognize themselves in my book, then that's a possibility for a lawsuit. And if they had given me the written authorization, then they would be in trouble. So I understand the reasons as to why they wouldn't give me the written authorization. I do understand that. But they also said, and of course I printed and kept that email, where it says, we will not disallow you to publish it.
Right.
Right.
That sounds not unlike tax laws and how the tax laws are written, right?
Right. Don't prohibit it. We don't permit it either, right?
Yes.
That's right. On your own.
Right.
That's right. That's right. Right.
Well, Anna, I think, though, I see a correlation between the timing of all this work on your behalf and your attempts to have the upper ups make this approved, to the point where they were fully aware of what disclosures were about to come out in your book.
Right.
And I can't help but see the irony of the timing of the new requirements or changes to procedure in sending employees out into the field,
right,
for unannounced collection visits. And I have to think that's a direct result of your work with this book. And I don't work for the IRS, but on behalf of everyone whose health and safety is better as a result of this, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You know, and I really, really appreciate this. And I hope if I could save one life, a life, just one life of anyone out there, you know, all that work was worth it. All that work was worth it. Anyone, whether it's a taxpayer or a revenue officer or any other employee, if I could help anyone, it was all worth it.
Well said. And what an exciting and gripping read. I really appreciate the effort that went into it. And thank you so much for coming today and sharing this information with us. It's we could go on and talk about this all day long. I just love it.
Yeah, and thank you. It's so great to talk to another enrolled agent who's doing great work in this field. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys. My pleasure.
Thank you, Anna Mace, for joining us today and sharing your invaluable experiences and insights. Your journey from an IRS revenue officer to an author and advocate offers a unique perspective on the complexities of the tax system and the human element within it. To our listeners, we hope this episode has shed light on the often unseen challenges and emotions behind tax collection and government bureaucracy. And for those of you who love a good, true tax crime story, I highly recommend checking out Anna's book called Tax Me If You Can, Tax Cheats, Government Waste, and The Shooter. It's a thrilling read, especially if you are interested in learning what happens beyond the veil of the IRS. You can find it on Amazon.com. It's available both in print and for Kindle. Join us next time on Tax Crime Junkies as we continue to explore the intriguing world of tax controversies and crimes. Until then, remember that every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.